Janice then took a deep breath and I knew the other entity was gone. All right then. I bid all of them farewell. I want them all to recede. And I want the consciousness of Janice to once again return totally to this body. Jay, she interrupted. The lights are flashing. D, why are they flashing? She seemed confused. Is it the energy? No answer, as though she was watching. Is it caused by the energy? 496. The custodians, Jay, softly, yeah. Because the maid interrupted. Sadly, she interrupted. D, she didn't know. Jay, she is banging on the door. She ruined it. Almost crying, in my opinion the flashing lights may have been caused by the maid's intrusion before Janice had fully integrated back into the physical. The energy was so strong that, when it was interrupted, it was dispersed into the electrical connections. It was such a frequency overload that it caused them to explode. It was not anticipated that the maid would cause a disruption before Janice could be returned totally. This could have caused physical damage, as they said, if the re-entry was interrupted, even by breathing. Instead, the entities sent the overload into the electrical circuit. At that time my journey was just beginning, and I could not have believed that my first baby steps would lead me all over the world. I did travel to London the first time in the next year 1992, and have journeyed to Europe at least twice a year ever since. I investigated the crop circles and visited the sacred sites, Stonehenge, Overbury, Glastonbury, giving lectures and spreading the information I have discovered in my work. I was the first American author and past life hypnotherapist to go into Bulgaria after it broke away from communist control, and I was in the Balkans directly across the border from where the fighting was occurring in Yugoslavia. I have spoken at every major city in Australia. In 1997 I climbed the Andes in Peru to see the ancient Inca ruins at Machu Picchu. I travel all over the United States now, and am often in a different city or state each day. We are now making plans to travel to Hong Kong, Singapore, and South Africa in 1999. It appears that soon I will have touched foot on all the continents in the world. The ultimate experience, 497. Have I left my energy in all of these places, as they said? If I have, then I have also not noticed any lack, as they said. In fact, if anything, my energy has increased as my work has spread. The books are now translated into many different languages, and thus the energy is being spread to places I would never have been able to travel, through the power of the written word. If this has occurred so unexpectedly to me, then every human being has the same responsibility. Each person spreads his energy unknowingly for either good or ill. The object should be to allow that energy to influence people in a positive way to allow our planet to grow into a higher spiritual plane of existence. Chapter 14, Investigating the Investigator. It appeared that once the aliens found a way to communicate with me through my subjects, or maybe it was the other way around, and I had discovered the method, they continued to supply information at every opportunity. The communication and influx of information is still continuing, and much of the more complicated parts will be included in the convoluted universe. This case shows that not even UFO hypnotherapists and investigators are immune. They can be having experiences without their conscious knowledge. I do not think this has happened to me, but I could not discount the possibility. However, I prefer my method of investigating. This way I can remain the observer, the objective reporter, and not experience the complicated emotions involved with active participation. The hypnotherapist in this case prefers to remain anonymous, because she has an active practice and does not want this information released prematurely. She is also planning to write her own book dealing with the information she has. 498, Investigating the Investigator. 499, Uncovered in her work. At that time she will refer to this case and the connection between us will be revealed. Thus, I will call her Bonnie. I have known her for several years and we have had contact professionally and on the lecture circuit. In June 1997 we were both speakers at a conference at a university in Wyoming. After it ended we held this session in the dormitory where we were staying. We were both extremely tired and I would be leaving the next morning. but we wanted to take advantage of the rare opportunity to be together and have the session. There were two men present who had asked Bonnie's permission. One of them operated Bonnie's tape recorder, while I monitored mine. Before the session, she told us about a strange incident that had occurred a month before in May 1997. She had the vague uneasy feeling that there was more to it, and she knew more details could be uncovered through hypnosis. She had been to a dinner meeting with several UFO researchers at a restaurant north of Santa Barbara in California. It had been very interesting and stimulating, so she did not leave until almost midnight. She knew the exact time she left the restaurant because she was estimating it would take her approximately 2.5 hours to drive home. She said, "I noticed it was 11:35 as I pulled out of the parking lot of the restaurant and got on the freeway heading south. This was Highway 101 along the Pacific coast. It was a very, very black night. Sometimes I really like to be in complete blackness, and this night was kind of velvety, elegant. And I was happy I was going to be driving home alone, so I could think about the wonderful evening visiting with all the other investigators. It was like meditation time, free thought time, driving by myself on that very, very black night. It was so black that I couldn't see where the shore on my right side ended and the ocean began. In past years when I drove that highway at night, I would be aware of reflections of oil rigs or boats. You had a sense of where the water was, or the moon might be out and casting a reflection on the water. But this was one of those nights when there were no stars, and it was so black you couldn't distinguish the difference between the land and the ocean. After 500, the custodians, a while I remembered seeing a little sign Seacliff. I had not remembered a town by that name on that highway, because it's a long stretch of coastline without any towns or any lights. I had been driving for quite a distance when I realized there were no other headlights and taillights on either side of the highway. At one point I thought it was kind of curious that I was the only car on the road. But it was all right, because I was very comfortable. Maybe that was why the next events were so unexpected, because I had no feeling of apprehension. Bonnie was driving through this long empty stretch when she was startled by a big round flash of light to her right down along the coast. It was white with a greenish tinge, and only lasted a second. And then nothing, no sound. It wasn't fireworks or flares. She simply thought it was odd and kept driving. There were big hills on the left side of the highway in this area of Highway 101. And as she drove through this uninhabited stretch of road, she noticed an incredibly bright glow of light shining from behind those hills. It covered a large area, had a round arc to it, and was not moving. It was very bright and had the same color as the flash, white with a slightly greenish tinge. She didn't think it could have been the same thing because she had not driven that far yet. They were two separate lights. The light behind the hills covered such a distance that it took her several minutes to go past it. She studied it, trying to see what was creating it, when unexpectedly something else drew her attention back to the road. There was something parked on her side of the highway. It looked like the back end of a very large truck, a big tractor trailer or semi. But there were no cones or reflector lights or flares, so it could be noticed by oncoming motorists. It wasn't all the way off the road on the shoulder, but was sitting partly on the highway. There was still plenty of room to pass it, but it created a dangerous situation, because her headlights didn't pick it up until she was very close to it. It was just suddenly there on her side of the road. As she approached it, she saw some people, maybe 4 or 5, walking around the back end of the truck and onto the freeway. Again, this was a dangerous situation, because they could have been hit. Investigating the investigator, 501, these were impressions, because it was all so fast. I was driving probably 70 miles an hour or more, because I was all alone on the freeway. I noticed this vehicle had some sort of dim light shining on it from the road, like maybe a flashlight had been put in the road, and was shining up on the back end. And just as I was about to pass it, I saw big black writing at the top of the back of the vehicle. My impression was that it said, in big black squarish letters, "Emergency Vehicle." And I thought, that's odd. I've never seen an emergency vehicle like that. It wasn't a fire truck or a police vehicle or an ambulance. You wouldn't normally think of a semi-truck being an emergency vehicle. My impression was that it was quite a long truck. Anyway, I thought the series of events were odd, the light down the coast, the light behind the hills. This big truck, emergency vehicle. People walking by, but no flares. And the thought flashed through my head that maybe this truck had just arrived, and maybe they were about to put out flares, and maybe it had something to do with the light behind the hills. It definitely wasn't a fire, but maybe this truck was investigating it or something. But all of this was just impressions, because it happened so quickly. These were just oddities, and I was feeling perfectly comfortable, no fear or anything. Then a second or two later, the weirdest thing of all happened. I don't know if I had driven all the way past the truck or was still in the area of the truck. But suddenly right in front of me, the whole windshield area of my car was completely dazzling, with the brightest light. I didn't see myself approaching a light or any light coming to me. It was as if a switch had been turned on, and suddenly the whole area right in front of me was blazing with light. All I could see through the windshield was this complete, dazzling light. It was probably the brightest light I have ever seen, yet it was very beautiful too, kind of yellowy white. It was blinding. It was very strange, but even more so, in the middle of the light, it looked like a strip of something. I could see this for only a fraction of a second before I hit it. It was either colorless or white, but it was in this light. It looked like a ribbon or maybe a tape stretched taut across the windshield and slightly at an 502, the custodian's angle, slanted down to my left. The first impression I would normally think of might be a wire, but it was wider than that, like a tape. This was very odd, because this was after this dark, dark, dark night. Everything black ahead, and then suddenly the windshield was completely filled with this dazzling light. And this thing stretched across, which obviously I was going to hit. And it made a tremendous smack. Almost like a crack smack sound. It seemed to reverberate all the way around me and through me. It was so startling. And I thought, what on earth was that? Then I noticed, right after the smack, that now there was a great big crack on my windshield. A big spider web crack on the driver's side, with big tendrils reaching halfway across the windshield. And then it seemed I was out of that light, and driving along with the regular lights of the headlights. The crack was not really blocking my field of vision, but I could see there wasn't any hole in it like a bullet or a rock would make. But even if it had been something like that, why would there have been all that blazing light? So I was really stunned. I kept driving, although one of my impulses was to slow down, pull over, back up and ask those men back by the truck if they had seen anything. But what I call the big voice of my soul was booming through to me so vehemently, "No. Get out of here. Keep going. Don't stop. Don't go back. Get out of here. Keep going. Keep going all the way home." And so I did keep going all the way home for another 2 hours, worrying the entire way whether the windshield might shatter. I got home a little bit after 2 o'clock. Which was the right amount of time, especially without traffic. Of course, Bonnie was filled with unanswered questions when she arrived home. She was relieved to find there was no missing time, but she could not account for the incredible light, and the strip stretched across the freeway that had cracked her windshield. She had thought about pulling off the highway and finding a payphone to call the highway patrol, but it was late and she was a woman alone, so she kept going until she arrived home. Her husband said he was glad she didn't stop. Sometimes people set up situations where they can trap people and rob them, investigating the investigator, 503, or steal their car, so it was very wise to keep going. At least whatever cracked the windshield didn't cause an accident. I agreed with Bonnie that this didn't sound like a normal incident. It had too many unusual components. I knew that under hypnosis we could get more details than the conscious mind could supply. Bonnie was an excellent subject and went into a deep state of trance immediately. Sometimes a fellow hypnotist can offer resistance, because they are aware of procedure and are consciously trying to analyze the technique being used. But I had no problem with Bonnie. She felt confident with me and relaxed and returned immediately to the scene on that night in May 1997. The only problem was that she was filling it with too much detail. She remembered the names of everyone present at the dinner, where they sat at the table, what they were eating and what they were discussing. I knew I would have to move the scene forward to the portion we wished to explore. She went through much detail as she left the restaurant, got into her car, noticed the exact time, and drove out of the parking lot. This is always a good sign. A subject that is reliving a true incident will supply more extreme detail than asked for, often considerably more than necessary, and will often volunteer seemingly irrelevant bits of information. This seems to be the subconscious method of being extremely accurate. Thus I knew we were off to a good start. She was reliving driving south on Highway 101. D. So as you're driving, it's just a normal drive? B. Well, it's normal except I am surprised there aren't any other cars ahead of me or behind me. And it seems strange there aren't any coming the other way either. D. Is there normally traffic there? B. Well, I don't usually drive home this late from Santa Barbara. But I would think on a Friday night around midnight there'd be some traffic. But it's very nice in the sense that I don't have any glare coming into my eyes from the oncoming traffic. 504. The custodians, Bonnie remarked about the blackness of the night and the inability to distinguish the land from the ocean. She then drove past the little sign Sea Cliff. Immediately afterwards she saw the big flash of a perfect circle of light down by the coast. A little further along she saw the big glow of a light shining behind the craggy mountains to her left. The light covered quite a distance, because it took her a while to drive past the reaches of it. So far she was reliving the evening just as her conscious mind had reported it, except she was continuing to supply information about the meeting at the restaurant, and her plans for the coming weekend. B. It's like a corona of light from something. And I don't see what the something is, because the hills are in the way. But the arc of this corona of light is like the top of a great big perfect curve, or circle. And it has a lot of definition to it. You know, some light is diffused and glowing at the edges, and just gradually fades into the darkness. But this one isn't that way. There's more like an edge to this light. It's so big and so bright, and I can't see where it's coming from. It's like that other thing that flashed. That's so interesting, because there was that flash on the right side, and now there's this big light shining on the left side. What could it be? There's no town over there or anything. I'm going at a really fast pace too, but it's so big it's taking me a while to go past it. And by the way, it's not moving around or anything. It's just staying there static. And now though, on the right side, I'm seeing this big thing. It looks like the big back end of a very tall truck. So I'm thinking of maybe a trailer truck or, I mean, it would have to be a really big vehicle to be that tall. I'm not seeing along the side of it or anything, or the front of it, cause I'm approaching it from behind, from the rear. And I'm thinking it's odd that I didn't see it until just right here. And I'm wondering why it's parked there. I'm assuming it might have something to do with that weird light over there, across the freeway, past the hills on the left. There's some kind of glow shining up at it, investigating the investigator, 505, from below. It must be from something on the highway, I guess. It's sort of a soft light. And I'm seeing the silhouettes of some people walking. And I'm not sure. D. Are you afraid you might hit them? B. Well, I see there's enough room. I wonder if we could sort of freeze. D. I was going to suggest that, to freeze the scene so we can examine it. B. Because I'm driving so fast. It happens so quickly. D. You can slow the whole scene down frame by frame. B. I need to do that. D colon 411 right. As you come up onto the back, you can see it very distinctly, and you can report it. Because as you slow it down you can see it in great detail. Tell me what you see as it is slowed down. B. Well, these people are very spindly. They're very thin, with long legs. They're all in motion. Some of them are walking past the back of this thing, this truck. They're all walking in different directions. Some of them are walking toward the front of the truck right on the freeway side. One or two are rounding the corner toward the back from the side. They're moving quickly, but smoothly. D. Can you make out any other details about them? B. They're different heights. She showed signs of discomfort. They have big heads. Becoming upset. D. Remember, you can look at it objectively if you want to, as a reporter. B. Almost sobbing. Well, they're not really people. D. Why do you say that? B. Because they're much thinner than people. And they have these long necks, and big heads. If they're people, they're very weird looking people. I thought they were human, men road crew people or something. D. Why does that bother you? B. Well, it's just a surprise. I didn't expect this. Still upset. It's not that it's bad. But it's a surprise. D. Naturally. As this is slowed down frame by frame, can you, 506, the custodians, make out more details about the object at the side of the road? You can see it clearly now. Her facial signs indicated something. What do you see? B. I see these big letters up there. Well, I thought they said, emergency vehicle. But it's more like a pattern, I think. It's kind of like, pause as she examined it, I want to say, triangles, but not exactly. Like parts of triangles, angular shapes. Like if you put them together in a certain way they'd form triangles, but they're not forming triangles. I wouldn't say they're letters like we have letters. And the corners are not sharp now. D. Do you think Lattery could draw it? B. I can draw part of it. I'm still going fast, very fast. D. I want you to fix that design, those letters, in your mind, so you will be able to draw them as best you can later. Can you do that for me? She mumbled something. Just remember what it looks like. B. And the glow of that light down there. I thought there was some sort of light on the road, but there isn't. You know what it is? It's something about that big vehicle that's just glowing from underneath. It's not that there's something shining on it like I thought. I don't think it's as long as I assumed it was either. And where there was a sharp edge, or a corner, between the side and the back, it's more of a curve. D. But you're moving past it. Tell me what happens, because you can know now. You can see all the details. B. Suddenly there's this tremendous light in front of my windshield. D. What is it? B. In wonder, I don't know. D. Yes, you do. B. It's just dazzling. It's so incredibly bright and dazzling that it's startling. I mean, I can't see anything else. I can't see anything through it, except I see in it. D. But your mind knows what it is. Trust it. Where is it coming from? Investigating the investigator, 507, B. It's coming somehow from them. D. These people? B. Yeah. And that sort of silvery thing with the light radiating out from under it, out the back of it. It's not even that same color light, but it is something to do with them. I know they're doing it. D. Then what happens? B. And then I'm. That's funny, I thought I just kept driving. But I'm not. I mean, I'm driving, but I'm driving up. Upward. That's so weird. Unbelieving, I'm still holding onto the steering wheel, and I'm driving up. And I'm still in all this light. I thought that light just lasted a second, but I'm still in it. Now it's all around the car, and it's all in the car. It's really a beautiful, beautiful light. D. Can you see where it's coming from? B. No. I'm not driving forward, but upward, as if on a big ramp or a hill. Up, heading up. D. Like at an angle? B. Uh-huh. But I also sense I can't be on the road anymore, because the road doesn't go up there. And there's also a feeling of lightness and effortlessness. I think the car motor isn't even on, but I'm still holding on to the steering wheel. D. Can you hear the motor sounds? B. No, I don't hear anything. Now instead of moving forward, it's like it's floating upwards. But I feel very protected, because I'm in a big oval bubble of bright, bright light. I can't see where the light stops. I just know that I'm in it. There was lots of distraction for me from noises going on outside. We were in a dormitory on a college campus. Earlier there had been busloads of young people arriving for a tennis tournament. They looked like high school kids. Now as it was getting dark, they seemed to be gathering on the street below the window. A lot of squealing, screaming and laughing was going on. I tried to ignore it. I hoped it would not interfere with the session. But normally the subject is so concentrated on what they are seeing that even loud noises do not disturb them at all. I got 508. The custodians up and closed the window, even though it made the room hot. B. This light is really beautiful. And it's all around the car, and it's even through the car. It's like I'm just sitting in this tremendous bubble of dazzling light. I don't hear anything, but everything's okay. I'm still hanging onto the steering wheel. That feels good. Okay. Now it's as if me and my car have come up into something. It feels like the car is being set onto something, like a floor or a ground or something. And that light is beginning to fade. D. Can you see where you are? B. It's a great big room. All around me, a circular room with hallways and doors going off it. And there's a lot of light too, but not as bright as the light I was just sitting in. D. How do you feel about this? B. Oh, it's okay. It's a surprise. Pause, but now there's a whole swarm of I want to say people, but they're not really people. They're all around the car. It's so funny. They must be up on the hood of the car looking in, and they're all around the windows. I turn around and look out the back, and they're there too. She found this amusing. D. What do they look like? B. Chuckle. Oh, they look really nice, but they're certainly not human beings. They've got these big liquidy eyes, and bald heads. I mean, they're not threatening at all. They're curious and childlike and friendly. And they're just peering in, and tilting their heads now to get a better look. D. At you or at the car? B. I think both. I think mostly at me, it feels like. And then they open both doors for some reason. And that's weird, because I had the doors locked. I always drive in the dark with the doors locked. They just opened them. Two of them. Loud laugh. Two of them are getting in the passenger seat to my right. My purse is there, and little candies I have out to eat in case I get sleepy. And they're pushing those off. And the second one is sort of pushing, nudging with his hip as the first one is in the seat. Like, investigating the investigator, 509, little kids, sort of, high-pitched, imitating kids' voice, I got to let her get in there first. And there are three or four by my door. And they're just reaching in, and there. It's weird, because I have a seat belt on and the door locked. But that doesn't seem to bother them. I'm not aware of anybody reaching over and unhitching my seat belt. But they're sort of dragging me out by my left arm. And then they grab me. Not grab me, but touch me on my right arm, and close the door. Now there's some on either side of me, and one or two right in back of me. And they're like shuffling on. D. Well, can you see what their hands look like, as they're touching your arms? Yeah. They have real skinny fingers. These guys are sort B, of, pause as she examines them. I want to say blue, but they're really much lighter. More of a gray with a bluey tint. And their eyes are very pretty. They're very big and liquidy and bluey too. Bluey blacky. D. Can you see how many fingers they have? B. Well, the one who has its hand on my right forearm, I can just see three fingers and then there's a funny thing trying to wrap around my forearm. It doesn't look really like a thumb, but it's sort of doing the job, more or less. D. So they have three fingers and this funny looking one. B. Yeah, and they are very thin. I guess we would call them sort of bony. D. Where are they taking you? B. Well, they're walking me along. I said shuffling. It isn't really shuffling. I'm not even walking the way I walk. I mean, it seems like I started to. But then I don't have to. Because we're kind of gliding along. It's real smooth. They're smooth and I'm smooth. And every once in a while, laugh, I stick down a foot, you know, as if to take a step. And that sort of slows us down. It gets in the way. So they're taking me across this big. I think it's really more of an oval shape than a round shape. I seem to be the only car and the only person. Oh, gosh, it's got a very high ceiling. 510. The custodians. There isn't really anything in it, but there are some doors. We're going across one end of the oval, in this floating kind of way. Not up in the air really. I think we're pretty near the floor. And I want to look around and see my car, and see what's happening to it. But I have a feeling they're really in there looking it over.